Right, okay. Lemon face, lion face? Lemon face! Lion face! Lemon face! I can't hear anyone else lemon face, lion face.
Lemon face!
Lion face!
Thank you. Yeah, all ready? Everyone ready to rock?
Probably.
Let's do it.
In which case, I'm Phil DeLuca.
No, you're not.
Oh.
I'm Nate Burgess.
Wait a minute. This is all wrong. I'm Sean Watson. Watson.
And we are Commander's Brew. I mean Commander Inn.
Good grief.
Ding, 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 ding,
it's
ding.
It's all
ding,
wrong. Ding, 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 ding.
Commander Inn.
No, seriously, listeners, just in case this is your first show, I'm not Phil DeLuca. I am Sean Watson.
Yeah, he is. I'm Nate Burgess. And we have our special guest,
Nick Jaragrulski.
That's him.
Hi, Nick. How's being a father doing for you?
Oh, it's excellent if you like smelling like formula all the time.
What? You didn't do that before you were a father?
Well, before it was my choice.
So, listeners, thank you for listening. We're going to put the spotlight on community issues, but never ever talk about the three banned topics: religion, politics, and Hearthstone.
And this time we mean it.
We do, yes. Remember to head over to join our Patreone community at patreon.com/CommanderInMTG by donating as little as $1 a show, and you'll get to be part of our Patreon chat group and get exclusive content early and stuff like that. And also you get access to competitions and better prizes and all the cool stuff we get. You'll get access to it sooner. And if you can't be a member of our Patreon group, don't worry, we've still got a load of cool stuff for you as well.
No, it's $10 a show to join the chat.
It is $10 a show to join the chat, but you also get samples of my hair and blood. Well, at least Phil's been asking them from
Ooh.
Me. Has he been asking for yours, Nate?
Yeah, but I don't give it to him.
He's trying to clone me again.
My voodoo.
This week, on a show that the Tolarian Community College's professor described as begrudgingly tolerable.
That's an advert you can be proud of.
Yeah.
It's a passing grade.
Yeah. We have a wonderful show lined up for you. We're going to talk about, well, Gruul tokens, specifically looking at big mana landfall triggers.
Big tokens, not big mana.
Big tokens.
They're different series.
That's true. You can see how I might get mistaken, though.
Do you even play green, Sean?
Okay, this week we have a wonderful show lined up for you. We're going to talk about big token landfall triggers.
Well, land shenanigans.
Land shenanigans. Now, yeah. Nick, we're skipping over our normal long list of friendly names for our guests, because you've been on so many times that you're kind of part of the furniture now. Is that okay?
That's perfectly fine, Sean.
So, Nick, Nick Jaragrulski, you've been on the show many times. You play Magic, particularly green-red Magic, because you were hit on the head as a child?
Once or twice.
But first, what have we been playtesting this week, fellas? Nate, what have you been playtesting?
I've been working on a Queen Marquesa deck that has some Monarch mechanics that tries to get everyone to fight everyone else.
How have you been finding Queen Marchi?
It works best if you're playing in a four-player pod. If you're playing in only two or three players, it's not as good, because part of the strategy of the deck is to put the Monarch mechanic out there and to get everyone else to be fighting everyone else.
Yeah, there's one in my paper, Pete, listener Pete, has started playing with one, and he's run it very much as a sort of you can't attack me kind of deck. So
yeah,
Wimbledon,
yeah.
Muse, Ghostly Prison, all that stuff.
Same here.
All the rattlesnakey cards. It seems to be doing quite well. It seems to win out of nowhere. Everyone kind of ignores it, going, well, it's not that threatening, is it? And then suddenly you look over his board state and go, Oh, he's built up a really nasty actual little board state there. Synergistic combos all over the place, and it's hard to get into him to do anything about it.
Yeah, it can throw up a pretty good enchantment lock, so nobody can attack you, or if they do, they lose all their stuff.
Speaking of enchantment locks, I've been playing with Esper Super Friends using enchantment locks as a way of stopping you attacking me. Now, you have to be careful with it, because a lot of those ghostly prison propaganda effects don't tax your opponents for attacking your planeswalkers.
Right.
So the two that you really need are Norn's Annex, which does specifically say planeswalkers, as does Sphere of Safety. But I've discovered a beautiful little blue card called Maishin the Mind Cage. Are you aware of this one, fellas?
Yeah, you've used that against me once.
Yeah, I used more heart in this deck. Are you aware of that one, Nick?
No, what's that one do?
It's a blue legendary artifact, so guess what set it was from. It is 4 and 3 blue to cast, so it's not without a trickiness to cast. But all creatures get minus X, minus O, where minus X is the number of cards in your hand.
Hmm.
Yep. It's a good, powerful deck. I've been playing with it a lot. It doesn't tend to lose much, but the annoying thing about it, and the reason I don't think I'm going to keep it for long, is it wins in the most boring, grindy way, where people just say, well, I can't do anything, so I'm just going to scoop.
It's mass dirtle.
It is mass dirtle. And if you're playing it digitally, not in paper, it takes so long to activate everything. To a point where I can go, right, well, I can activate the Chain Veil 3 times. Is everyone happy if I just put the end result on the table? Yeah, sure. Woo! So I'm not sure how long I'm going to keep that deck for. I'm going to playtest it a bit more, but I think I might keep it as a punishment deck for when I'm playing someone who's being a bit of a jackass. I can go, right, I'll show you the true meaning of dirtle. Nick, what have you been playtesting?
We've been playtesting Sylvala, Heart of the Wild, the pure green version of the one in Conspiracy 1.
Yeah, she's trouble.
And she is quite good. I think I made Nate concede the first time I played with him.
Yeah. I won the second game, though.
Yeah, you did.
So what's her ability do again? Remind me.
She has 2 abilities. The first one says anytime a creature hits the battlefield, if it has the highest power on the table, its controller draws a card. So that affects everybody. And then the second ability, the important one, says tap, add X mana of any color combination to your mana pool, where X is the greatest power of creatures you control.
Yeah.
So don't need a lot of land ramp in the deck, because by herself, you're making a lot of mana by turn 5 or 6. And the first game I played with Nate, I had a activated Colossus of Akros out, and she was tapping for 20 at that point. And she's getting less good as I play her more, because people are starting to take her more seriously now, but she is still a lot of fun to play.
Well, that's always part of the learning process.
I love it when you get an unassuming commander that it's new card, and it's not like Leovold where everyone's gone, oh my god, my eyes are bleeding at the power of that card. So for the first few weeks you play with it, everyone just kind of ignores you. Ailey did this. Everyone ignored Ailey. Went, oh yeah, she's pretty good, but it's not that scary, is she?
Yeah, I had the artifact Umbral Mantle in the deck. Yeah. I don't know if you know what that does, but
oh, I do.
I felt a little dirty playing it after a while, so I took it out. It's just too easy to say, well, I'm going to go infinite now, and, you know, that's no fun.
Umbral Mantle is a dirty card in a lot of decks.
It's ironically very dirty in the other Sylvala as well. So you can mill all your opponents out. If you're in, like, a 5-player pod, you've mathematically got a very good chance of being able to just mill everyone out.
Do you have a lot of Hydras in your Sylvala deck, Nick?
I only have a couple of the ones that do something extra, like Lifeblood Hydra, draw a lot of cards, that sort of thing. It's more just utility creatures is what I found out the deck has become. The only creature I have that isn't a utility creature is Colossus of Akros, and that's just because it will make you a ton of mana after it's been out for a turn.
It's big!
Yeah, it just wins by flooding the board with dudes in one turn and then playing Concord and Crossroads and smashing everyone in the face for 30 or 40. I think I'll actually put the Green Gear Hulk in Sylvala. An 8-8 for 5 mana is pretty good.
The Gear Hulks are going to be trouble.
Yeah, Fat Caster Mage, which wasn't my invention, but that's what he is. The blue one is excellent. I think I might put all 3 of them into my Esper Artifacts deck.
I know the red one's going into my Felden deck.
Yeah, Red's doing really well out of Kaladesh. Good luck with Solhalla, Nick. I look forward to beating your sad mono-green backside into the dirt. Because, as we know, there's no such thing as a good mono-green commander. Nope. All you people shouting at me.
Sean.
Yes? You're all wrong, and we're definitely not going to discuss one of them today. We're going to talk about Gruul cards. Particularly one Gruul commander. And this is not my area of expertise, so one of you boys, go for it.
Omneth, Locus of Rage.
Angry Jellybean.
He's a little bit expensive, but, you know, we're in a color that helps us with that a little bit. He costs 3 2 red and 2 green legendary creature elemental 5/5. Landfall. Whenever a land enters the battlefield under your control, put a 5/5 red and green elemental creature token onto the battlefield. So suddenly all of those fetch land cards that Sean loves so much, like Cultivate and Kadama's Reach, they become a little bit more spicy.
Weaponized.
And the second ability, whenever Omneth, Locus of Rage, or another elemental you control dies, Omneth deals 3 damage to target creature or player. So all of your elementals are now doubling as lightning bolts.
I mean, straight out of the book, on the card, that's just a powerful ability without even rigging your deck to abuse it. It's very strong.
Yeah, I saw this card when it was first spoiled, and I immediately went out and made a deck out of it. I didn't go strictly for good stuff. I actually did a elemental tribal build. When you take a look, there are actually enough out there to make it work, and it just makes your entire deck, I wouldn't say immune to board wipes, but it makes a board wipe your opponent wants to cast a lot less tempting to do so, because you're just going to be punishing them either way.
Yeah, like, if you blow up all my stuff, I am going to bolt you in the face for X. Is really nice threat. Really, really nice threat. So, when this card first got spoiled, I think he was kind of the opposite of the Solhalla and Ailey we were talking about before. Our paper group went, oh my god, he's so powerful, he's going to be top tier, like, never be stopped commander, and someone built him, and he was that good for a little bit, and then we all worked out how to play against him, and now he's just very decent, and he feels like a real fun deck to play against and a real fun deck to play with. You've got experience with him. What's the best cards in the deck, Nick?
Like I said before, the best cards in the deck are cards that allow you to go fetch lands. So your basic Kadama's Reach, Cultivate, all those cards that just go grab lands, Rampant Growth.
Geishrock Clay.
That, yeah. Even the creatures, Secure a Tribe Elder, Wood Elves, anything that goes and gets you a land is now suddenly that much better. Because you are now getting creatures that go with it.
Ovenwald Hydra.
That's a little more expensive, but it also works.
Sylvan Primordial.
Primetime.
Aww.
There are a couple of expensive cards, money-wise, that are really good. One of them is Scapeshift. It's a 2 and 2 green sorcery. Sacrifice any number of lands. You may search your library for that many land cards, put them into play tapped, then shuffle your library. And they don't have to be basic lands. They can be any land that you want.
Mm. So you're sacrificing all those lands? Before we go on too much, there's also another commander we want to talk about, because this is the Big Tokens Land Shenanigans episode. So we'll talk about Titania, Protector of Argoth. She's 3 and green-green, legendary creature elemental, 5/3. When Titania, Protector of Argoth, enters the battlefield, return target land card from your graveyard to the battlefield. So that's a nice little perk. But whenever a land you control is put into a graveyard from the battlefield, put a 5/3 green elemental creature token onto the battlefield. So, if you're sacrificing all your lands and you have Titania out, you get a mess of elementals. And then, when you get all your lands in, Omneth makes a bunch of elementals.
Yeah.
So, very similar. Most of these green... Obviously, the red ones won't go into Titania, but most of these green cards fit straight into Titania as well.
Yeah, and Titania can be her own commander or just work with Omneth, and she's an elemental herself, so it's very synergistic.
So a card which I think goes perfectly into Omnath, probably slightly less in Titania, but is a powerhouse in Omnath, is a little uncommon enchantment from original Ravnica, Perilous Forays, which is 3 and 2 green for an enchantment. Pay 1 generic mana, sacrifice a creature, search your library for a land card with a basic land type, put it into play tapped, then shuffle your library. So what that says is pay 1, get a land out of your deck, and bolt someone for 5 damage.
And get an elemental.
Yes, and get another elemental.
3 damage.
3 damage, so yeah, bolt someone, I should say. It makes a 5-5 elemental. So that is just repeatable goodness. The only thing I've seen go wrong with that deck is someone played it a bit late in the game, stripped out all their stuff, and realized they had no more land left in their deck.
Yep.
Which meant I could go, I'm going to mind grind for 1. Bye, deck! Which is quite funny. Perilous Forays, if you're running Omnath, is great. I'm not sure she goes into Titania so much, or it goes into Titania. It has an elf lady on the artwork.
Nah, I wouldn't run it in Titania myself.
So if I don't have $44 for Escape Shift, what have I got to mass dump land into my interplay as a replacement, fellas? Let's imagine for a second I was trying to play green.
Wave of Vitriol, 5 and green, green sorcery. Each player sacrifices all artifacts, enchantments, and non-basic lands he or she controls. So if you play a bunch of non-basics, then you can wipe them out. And then, for each land sacrificed this way, its controller may search his or her library for a basic land card and put it onto the battlefield tapped. Then everybody shuffles their libraries.
Very nice. Also, the added bonus of a lot of people that play 3 and 5 color decks, that destroy all the non-basics is going to really hurt their deck.
Oh, yeah.
Really hurt their deck. Anything else?
We have Boundless Realms, Sean. 6 and a green, sorcery. Search your library for up to X basic land cards, where X is the number of lands you control, and put them onto the battlefield tapped. Shuffle your library. So, as many basic lands as you have, go ahead and grab that many more, and put that many tokens onto the battlefield, if you're playing Omnath, that is.
Yeah, that's really quite special. I think you need a Haste Enabler to get that going as well. Another really, really, really amazing card that we've not got listed here. Now, it's a green card that's abusable if you've got lots of mana, and obviously you're pumping land out of your deck quickly and repeatedly. Genesis Wave. Genesis Wave is an absolute star in the Omnath deck. So it's X and 3 green. Reveal the top X cards of your library. May put any number of permanent cards with converted mana cost X or less from among them onto the battlefield. Then put all cards revealed this way that weren't put into the battlefield into your graveyard. Wow. So that not only gets you X permanents off the top of your deck, but it also gets you 1/5/5 for each land you drop.
Yeah, I see that more in decks that can generate a lot of mana, like Kruphix, God of Horizons.
Do you not find the Omnath deck, even more than the Titania deck, just tends to generate a bunch of mana? You need to hit, like, a few ramp spells, and then... I know people try and do silly things with Genesis Wave, try and do it, like, for 40 and things like that.
Yeah.
But I think a Genesis Wave for 10 is super worth it when you're going to get 3, 4, 5, 6, if you've built your deck specifically for it, 3, 4, 5, 6, 5, 5 elementals at the same time.
I have it in my Omnath deck, and I think it runs pretty great.
You have it in your Silvala deck, too, right?
Oh, yeah, I have it in Silvala. Silvala, you can easily get to 40 mana and play your entire deck in that turn. But you don't need to do that. Like Sean said, just playing it for 10 or 12, you get enough value out of it that it's fine to put it inside the deck, I think.
Yeah, but don't you ever have, like, you keep your own mental personal record of the biggest Genesis Wave you've ever cast, and, like, you always want to top it every time. You always want to get there. Come on, I can do it for 42 this time.
Yeah, this may not be the deck for that, unless you're running some cards like Gaia's Cradle or...
Yeah. Oh, Gaia's Cradle, yeah.
The Xenagos Planeswalker. That's probably achievable then, but if you're just running the standard ramp package, you may not get there.
Yeah, you don't get that urge to beat your record, though. Maybe it's just me. I don't know.
If you're running Skullwinder and Eternal Witness and Green Warden, A good trick is to cast your Genesis Wave and then Eternal Witness the Genesis Wave back to your hand.
Mm.
Do it again.
Yeah, so that's a new goal for you, Nate. Not how big can you get it, but how many times can you cast it?
Yes. And remember, the lands it dumps in the Genesis Wave come in untapped.
Yikes.
Don't forget that. It's a good card. So, looking more specifically at Omnath here, there's a lot of good ways of abusing all those tokens coming in, isn't there? Other than just having a 5/5 elemental, like, that's not good enough. What else is really good for it?
Well, Sean, what if I told you that when those creatures enter the battlefield, they could deal 2 damage apiece to each opponent?
What?
Yeah, there's a little known enchantment from a block a few years ago, Theros. It's called Perforos, God of the Forge.
Oh, okay, right. I've not heard of this one. If it's just an enchantment, I can destroy it though, right?
No, you can't. This enchantment actually is indestructible.
What?
And it is not just an enchantment. If you have enough devotion, it can become a creature. But we don't worry about that part. The enchantment is what is important here. 3 in a red, legendary enchantment creature god. Indestructible. As long as your devotion to red is less than 5, Perforos is not a creature. Whenever a creature enters a battlefield under your control, Perforos deals 2 damage to each opponent. And then there's some other text on there that I've never really read, and I don't know what it is, but something about fire breathing.
So if the rules committee ever ban Perforos, are all the Gruul token players going to go around to our friend Sheldon Menery's house and just smash up his wine cellar?
Mm.
We're going to do 1 bottle a day until you unban Perforos.
That would be unwise.
And just for clarity, I'm looking at the Commander and MTG podcast drinking game list that we have up on DeckStats, and Perforos, God of the Forge, has been on that list for quite a while. So
take a drink.
Hopefully you're all wasted now.
Well, if you want to get more wasted, a card we've not mentioned, unbelievably, is Doubling Season.
Come on.
Yeah, so Doubling Season and Parallel Lives are both great cards in this deck. If you don't know what they do, go look them up. It'll become obvious. We're not going to go into them. Primal Vigor, maybe also, but it's a bit double-edged sword because your opponent can kill you to death with it. So, Tempt of Vengeance is a good red token generator, especially if you're going with the elemental theme, which Omnath is also keying into. It's an X and 1 red for a sorcery. Tempting Offer, put X, 1/1 red elemental tokens with haste onto the battlefield. Each opponent may put X, 1/1 red elemental creature tokens of haste onto the battlefield, but for each player who does that, you get that many again. So, hey, Nick, I'm putting 5 elemental tokens onto the battlefield. Do you want 5?
Actually, I would say no, but if you're some of the people I've played against, they, for some reason, say yes.
Sweet, I've got 10 elementals now. Hey, Nate, do you want 5 elementals?
Sure.
Sweet. Right, so normally what happens, if the first person says yes, the next person goes, well, sod it, I might as well have elementals as well.
Yep.
If the first person says no, you might be less lucky. Like, everyone else might see sense and go, no, never take the elementals, everybody. Unless you have your own Perforos and it's going to kill the person who's casting the tempt. Then they deserve to die for stupidity. But Tempt with Vengeance is a great one. And that was a original Commander product, or was it Commander 2014, I forget. No, it was Commander 2013, wasn't it? Tempt of Vengeance.
Mm-hmm.
In the Marath deck.
If you have your Perforos out, nobody's going to take those elementals.
No, they're not.
No. But even if you are only getting the ones that you paid for, it's basically saying put that many lightning bolts onto the battlefield.
Mm. So I think Elemental Mastery is a card worth talking about. One of you guys want to take this one?
Yeah. Elemental Mastery, 3 in a red, enchantment aura. Enchanted creature has tap, put X11 red elemental creature tokens with haste into play, where X is the creature's power. It has the old text, but exile them at the end of turn. So it's not as good as some of the other ones because they do get exiled, and Omnath only cares about the elementals dying. So you do need a way to sacrifice them before the end of turn. Not terribly difficult, but it's just something to keep in mind.
You can't just throw them at people over and over again is a nice tactic with them. Like, you can block them, but if you block them, you're taking even more damage. So they kind of become unblockable 1/1s at that point. Yeah, because if you block them and kill them, you're taking three, aren't you? So just let them through. And if you've got Purphoros out again, once again, it does stuff. So you want all the haste enablers in these decks. So your elementals that are coming in can attack nice and quickly, the ones that are coming in with Omnath.
If an elemental dies when Omnath is on the field, you get to choose who takes the damage. So it doesn't necessarily have to be the person who's blocking him. You could get some teamwork going in against some other player who's got a board state.
Politrickery. Very nice.
Send your elementals to their death against player B so that player C can take all the damage from their dying.
And it could also be used as a defensive mechanism. You just tap Omnath during the turn someone is attacking you, and all of a sudden they're being blocked by a bunch of tokens that will deal 3 damage to them, so.
Mwah. I think it's a good card. A very good card. So you got your red haste enabler, so you've got Fires of Yavimaya, which is a gruel haste enabler, and Hammer of Purphoros, and Fervor, and there's a few others. What can you do if you want to get haste into Titania's deck?
Concordant Crossroads is pretty much it, I think.
Yeah, so Concordant Crossroads is a very old card. The problem is 1 green for an enchantment, but it gives all creatures haste. Not just yours, all creatures haste.
Well, you cast it on the turn you play in your Alpha Strike for.
Yeah, and if you don't get through the Alpha Strike, you could, like, if the Alpha Strike gets fogged, something, you're in a lot of trouble. I think it's a great card, and I've died to it after mocking it slightly, and I've learned to respect it as a card. It's a bit like Coat of Arms. You only drop it when you're going to get your kill switch with it.
There's also the colorless artifact Akroma's Memorial for 7, which is a legendary artifact. All the creatures you control have flying, first strike, vigilance, trample, haste, and protection from black and red.
Yeah, that is such a good card.
And that's such a good pretty card. Much a game ender when you have a bunch of tokens out.
Yeah, it's going up in price now. It's going to be $9 now. And it's won me tons of games. Even without tokens, it just makes all my creatures fly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's fantastic. Other cards that do similar things, like Archetype of Imagination and Shuyun, the horsemanship guy. Sun Quan, Lord of Wu. Those are really powerful cards. So anything that just gives all your team evasion, especially in green where not much flies.
You can do Eldrazi Monument.
Yeah, Eldrazi Monument's okay.
Does that give them haste?
No, it doesn't, but it gives them flying and indestructible, so it kind of gives you a turn to take the hit before you can attack the turn after. I still think Akroma's Memorial is a better card than Eldrazi Monument. So I don't know much about Titania, so hit me with your knowledge stick, guys.
All right, in both Omnath and Titania, and also a couple of other commanders we're going to give as honorable mentions here, there's Mina and Den Wildborn, they're in Gruul, and you can play an extra land per turn. Is one of the things they do, and that's kind of important in these decks because you want a lot of lands coming in. And other ways to do that are enchantments like Burgeoning and Exploration. There's Oracle of Moldiah. Courser of Crufix lets you play the top card of your deck if it's a land.
Azusa Lost But Seeking if you really hate having money.
Yep.
What's the other one that lets you put an extra land into play? Burgeoning,
yeah,
which has just been reprinted. Oh, did you? Sorry, Nate. Exploration, do you say that one?
Yep.
All I hear is green cards. Green.
Yeah. There's an enchantment called Mana Bond for a single green. At the beginning of your end step, you may reveal your hand and put all land cards from it onto the battlefield. If you do, discard your hand.
Not to be confused with Fast Bond. Which is a very banned card that does similar.
Yeah, so in addition to those kinds of cards, you also want ways to sacrifice lands for Titania's ability to go into effect. Sylvan Safe's Keeper is a good one. She sacrifices a land to give a creature Shroud until end of turn. And then all, like, Constant Mist, that's a good one. You can sacrifice a land for the buyback cost, and it basically does a fog for the turn. And then all of your lands that just sacrifice themselves to go get a land, like Evolving Wilds, Terramorphic Expanse, Ghost Quarter.
Yeah, all your fetch lands.
All your fetch lands.
panoramas, warped landscape. There's a couple lands that I like that when they come in, you have to sacrifice other lands. There's Lotus Vale is a land. If Lotus Vale would enter the battlefield, sacrifice two untapped lands instead. If you do, put Lotus Vale onto the battlefield. If you don't put it, it's in the graveyard. And you can tap it to add 3 mana of any one color to your mana pool. So it does ramp you a little bit. And it moves your lands between the battlefield and the graveyard, which is what you want to do with these commanders. Another one is Scorched Ruins. If Scorched Ruins would enter the battlefield, sacrifice 2 untapped lands, blah blah blah, and you can tap it to add 4 colorless to your mana pool. And there you go.
As long as you're talking about those, you can also mention Crop Rotation. It's a 1 green instant. As an additional cost to cast it, you sacrifice a land, search your library for a land card, and put that card onto the battlefield, untapped. And the other one would be Harrow.
Harrow.
Which is 2 and a green. Harrow. As an additional cost to cast it, sacrifice a land. Does everybody's play meta say that? I think they do. Search your library for up to 2 basic land cards and put them onto the battlefield, untapped. Shuffle your library.
Harrow, is it land you're looking for? Can you see it in your eyes? Here's a silly card, just because of its name.
A popular Titania card I don't play myself because I don't own one is Crucible of Worlds. Mm. Although I might be able to get a new one with those Kaladesh cards coming out.
Yeah, it's expensive now. And it'll still be expensive.
Luckily owned a couple from Mirrodin when I was playing before I took my big break from Magic and came back in RTR.
I think it's going to be an invention with the Kaladesh cycle.
Yep.
It is, yes, and the artwork on it is very nice. Of course, a card we've not spoken about, fellas, if we're looking at cheap cards that are really good in both of these decks, Splendid Reclamation.
Oh, that's the new Eldritch Moon card?
Eldritch Moon. Yeah, 3 and a green for sorcery. Return all land cards from your graveyard to the battlefield tapped. Wowzers. So they do. It does 2 different things in the 2 different decks. In Omnath, it gives you a whole bunch of elemental tokens, plus all your land back if you've been running fetch lands. And by fetch lands, we don't just mean the wooded foothills. We also mean like all the Terramorphic Expanses and all the really cheap fetch lands. So you get a ton of creatures. With Titania, if you've been sacking all your lands, it allows you to reset without having to spend $80 on a Crucible of Worlds.
Meh.
Oh, it's such a good card. And then if you can get your Eternal Witness and your Skullwinder and all those things back, you can sack all those lands again, get more lands out, then get your Splendid Reclamation back.
Meh.
I need to go shower.
Yeah, that was such a good card from Eldritch Moon, and a lot of people spoke about it, like our friends over the Command Zone and Commander's Brew all mentioned this card was really good. I think Wedge over at Mana Source mentioned how amazingly bonkers this card's going to be. Professor mentioned it. I've not actually seen it getting much play. I don't know why. Is it just like I've not come across the decks that are optimizing it, or have people just not realized it's there?
I think with new sets, the bombshell cards get played first, and then the cards that are just below that, like the B plus A minus, those take a little bit longer to work their way into EDH, at least in high volume. So I think within the next year or so, you will see these be played a lot more often.
I think it's an A plus card if we're using the grading system. I think it's that good. Just imagine if you're playing in a paper meta that had people run mass land destruction as well. You just draw that Splendid Reclamation and go, yeah, you can wipe. We'll see who's going to win that race. Yeah, so, okay, we always have to talk about these things. So obviously these are powerful decks. You're going to be chucking out a load of big, powerful, punchy creatures. With Omnath, you've got the advantage, of course, of having access to haste and dealing damage. With Titania, you've got access to all the sweet overrun ability. Well, I mean, you've got Omnath as well, but you've got more space in your deck for all sort of sweet overrun abilities and shenanigans with sacrificing lands for bonuses. How do we fight against these decks? What's the best way to take them out?
I like board wipes, but that doesn't always work against Omnath.
I find with Omnath, if you're going to wipe the board, you need to find a way of taking Omnath out first.
Yeah.
Because if Omnath's gone, doesn't matter when his elementals die.
Yeah, spot removal on Omnath, or if you have a way to make sure the triggered abilities don't work, that would also be good.
Yeah, make him expensive.
Both of these decks are very reliant on their commander being on the battlefield to be at their most effectiveness. So if you can just play blue and counter Omnath or Titania, you're already in good shape.
And both these decks are not in the colors of card draw, so if you have ways of stalling their card draw, they'll probably be running the green sort of draw X cards where X is the number of creatures you control type effects. If you can switch them off and keep their hand low, they really don't do much. They kind of just sit there going, I've got some derpy creatures. And you go, you have, haven't you? Well done. And Omnath, he's a whopping 7 mana to cast first time. Now, I know the deck's ramping, but if all they're doing every turn is recasting Omnath, they're not actually doing anything, are they?
Yeah, so Command Beacon is a really important card for this deck, just because of that reason.
That's probably good in Titania as well, because... oh no, hang on, if you're sacrificing the Command Beacon to get Titania back, she's not in play. Scratch that, that's me being an idiot. Derp.
So, let's see, Nick, we're in green. Which of the Nissa Planeswalkers would you play or not play in these decks?
Oh, that's a good question. I would play the Flipwalker from Origins. She goes and grabs you a land from your deck, and then she does Coiling Oracle as her +1 when she flips over.
That's Nissa Vastwood Seer?
Yes, that's the one. She comes to mind first. One I definitely wouldn't play would be Original Nissa, because she really doesn't do anything for the deck at all. And then I think all the others kind of fall somewhere in between. I think there's one that untaps X lands and they all become elemental creatures until end of turn?
Nissa World Waker is 3 green green, +1, target land you control becomes a 4/4 elemental creature with trample, it's still a land. Another +1 is untap up to 4 target forests, and -7, search your library for any number of basic land cards, put them onto the battlefield, then shuffle your library. Those lands become 4/4 elemental creatures with trample, they're still lands.
Mm. Yeah, that's a powerful effect, but I tend to avoid looking at Planeswalker Ultimates when reading them, just because I so rarely get them to go off. Unless I'm playing Doubling Season, and then, you know, it's fine.
Take a drink.
Now, if you're Sean, you don't need that, but...
No, because I am the master of ultimating Planeswalkers. Or only one Planeswalker, really, Nick. Every time I play Nick, I seem to, even if I'm not playing Azorius Colors, I seem to find a Narset Transcendent from somewhere and ultimate her against him.
It's in his wishboard.
Pretty much. What do you think of the new Nissa, Nick? Or have you not read it?
Oh, there's two new Nissas.
There's two new Nissas, actually.
Oh, the one that's actually in Kaladesh rather than the one that's being printed in the...
The Planeswalker dual deck.
Which I think they're really cool, those decks, by the way. That's for a different time. So Nissa Vital Force, 3/2 green for a 5 loyalty Planeswalker, which is pretty good. +1, untap target land you control, and until your next turn, it becomes a 5/5 elemental creature with haste. It's still a land. -3, return target permanent card from your graveyard to your hand. Very nice. -6, which I think is an achievable ultimate, considering, you know, you get it a turn after. You get an emblem with, whenever a land enters the battlefield under your control, you may draw a card. Hooey! That is a card for these decks.
Oh yeah, so if you get this out, an ultimate Nissa, and then you play the Splendid Reclamation we were talking about earlier, yeah, you're going to be sitting pretty fine.
She's an amazing Nissa. I think she might be my favorite Nissa. If you want to talk good Planeswalkers, though, from this set, the new Chandra, wowzers, the Tortured Defiance, wow. I think she'd be pretty good in the Omnath deck, actually, because essentially you're playing a sort of green-red hybrid burn tokens deck, aren't you?
Well, she's just kind of a good stuff in that case.
Oh, but she burns, and she helps you ramp to get into recasting your Omnath.
Yeah.
She's great. I think if you open her, don't trade her, because I think she's going to be pricey for a while.
Yeah, the last two Chandras they've made have really been up there.
Oh, the
Zendikar one?
The Zendikar one is really good for Omnath because it makes those two elemental tokens.
Yeah.
I forget which one. What's it called?
It's also a card draw.
There's so many chandras, and they're all called Torching Flame Gasm or Sparking Burninator.
Burninating the countryside.
Chandra! Chandra! Onala! Of course, it is Chandra Flame Caller, which is plus one. Put 2/3/1 red elemental tokens with haste onto the battlefield, exile at the beginning of your next end step. Now, they're basically unblockable because they're dealing 3 damage whoever they attack at, aren't they? Unless someone has a 0/4 defender.
Tree of Perdition.
It's a 0/3/13 defender, or possibly a 0/40 defender. But yeah, Chandra. There have been some bad Chandras, but the last two have been exquisitely good. So I think other than killing the commanders, the way to deal with these decks is just deal with them how you would any kind of big creature deck. Just try and keep the board wiped and try and stop them drawing cards.
You have to race them.
Yeah, just try to win.
Yeah.
Try not to lose.
Well, they're kind of aggro decks, aren't they, at the end of the day? I think the Omnath deck's better than Titania because it has the backup damage of having the commander out. And I think the Omnath deck, you want some sac outlets in the deck. So Ashnod's Altar and Phyrexian Altar, if you're so inclined.
Greater Good.
Or Greater Good. Card draw and a sac outlet.
Mm-hmm.
High Market, if you're tinkering with your lands. An important question for these decks, chaps, and I'm going to bow to your superiority on this, is how many land, on average, would you run in either of these decks?
My standard is 38 land cards for a deck. I think in my Omnath, I have 42, actually.
Yeah.
Just because it's so important for the deck to run efficiently that way. Normally, when you top deck a land card in a different deck, you get a little disappointed. But with Omnath, it's just, oh, I get a land and a 5/5, so it's not a detriment.
Hmm. Yeah, I think I presumed it would be more than your sort of standard bunch. I generally run 37 or 38, depending on the average CMC of the deck.
Yeah, I would go 40 or more in land shenanigans decks, because you're going to have a lot of cards that are searching for other lands, and you don't want to run out of a certain type.
And if enough of your lands are sacrificing to thin out other lands, it's not that big of a deal.
Hmm, very true. So any final comments on these two guys? Well, guy and gal, or it thing and gal.
Nick, do you play landfall creatures like Rampaging Baloths or Tunneling Geopede?
I've got Avenger of Zendikar in mine. I think I have Lotus Cobra in mind, because, oh, yeah, like Sean said, you're going to be killing Omnath a lot, so you need ways to generate some extra mana. I think that's it for me as far as landfall goes. Oh no, I have Stone Cedar Hierophant, which is old school landfall. She taps to untap a land, so I use her for my Nykthos and my Guy's Cradle quite a bit. But no, I'm not running Plated Geoped or Rampaging Baloths myself. Like I said, I'm going more of the Elemental Tribal.
Avenger of Zendikar, I presume, is in both of these decks, because it's Avenger of Zendikar.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can't think of many green decks that don't run that card, just because, you know, it's that good.
Well, he was on the fence for me, because he is an elemental himself, but he makes plants, so
yeah,
it was a crisis of faith.
Those plants are going to get big fast. So my ultimate dream, and I never pulled it off, and I actually don't have the deck anymore, was in Maelstrom Wanderer, was to cascade into Avenger of Zendikar, then Boundless Realms.
Yep.
Ew.
Because you think you're generating so much land with the deck, that Avenger of Zendikar, those plants are going to get out of control, I think, quicker than people would expect.
Yeah, and if you do play Boundless Realms in your deck, you certainly need a higher land count, because you do need a bunch of basic lands.
I have held a kill spell when I knew my opponent had a Boundless Realms in their hand. They're playing with Omnath. And they're like, Boundless Realms. I'm like, cool, I'm going to kill Omnath. You've stripped half the land out of your deck and you've made zero elementals. Lol. So I think maybe you need the Boots and the Greaves and the usual Hexproof packages in that deck.
Oh, yeah.
In both of these decks, just to keep your commander going.
Yeah. Well, that's why next turn you cast Genesis Way for 40.
Come on, people, I want to hear a story of someone casting Genesis Wave for 99, which is at least one card more than you can physically have in your deck.
That's too many. Too many. I got a Villainous Wealth off for 40 once. So that's...
I think I was in that game. Yeah, it was good.
That's a record I got to beat.
Okay, challenges. Challenges, listeners. Scratch your records. Scratch them clean. I don't care what you've done before. Between now and our next mailbag episode, I want to hear genuine stories of the highest Genesis Wave and or Villainous Wealth counts you've got. That's your challenge. Go do it. Go do it.
Should we go into any X spells? Like Exsanguinate or Mind Grind?
I've exsanguinated for like 130 before.
Debt to the Deathless.
Debt to the Deathless, what a card. Yeah, okay, we'll go for any X spell. Highest X spells, that's your rush. I presume if you're playing with black ones, you're going to be doing that with Cabal Coffers and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. What a card. Cabal Coffers, Urborg, please.
Well, if you're doing Villainous Wealth, you're in Sultai, so you've got green in there too.
Oh, God, yeah, you're not wrong. Sultai is such a broken wedge.
Mm-hmm.
It's so broken. It's a shame it's against my religion to play with it.
I like my Damia deck. It's a landfall deck.
Yeah, I've played it a couple of times, and the first time you played it, I didn't really know what was going on.
Sultai is an interesting wedge. I think you can actually do most of Sultai in one. If we were doing it as an episode, we could do it in one solid episode, because the commands it has are very limited. They're all good with, you know, some of the really odd ones maybe as an exception, but they all kind of do the same thing, with the exception of Mimeoplasm, and even then, that's messing around with graveyards. Sultai is just super powerful. I've just never found anything inspired me to do it. I was excited about Leovold, and then I thought about it and went, oh, that's too powerful for me. I like to have friends.
Leovold tore up the social contract.
Yeah, basically.
He negotiated a new contract.
Contract of hatred. Yeah. Well, the chickens will come home to roost and Leovold. He'll go into that Narset category soon enough, where people will just kill you the second you get him out.
I think he was in that category before he was even released.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, to quote Sean Main when we were discussing Leovold, well, I say discussing, telling him off about Leovold. He knew we were only doing it for a second. But he said, well, I hope the sky isn't falling quite as bad as you guys are saying. And we were on purposely trying to be harsh on it. But I do think that was a mistake. I'd be surprised if it's not banned in French soon.
French banned some silly cards.
That's true. Like Soul Ring. I mean, that's not powerful in a 1v1 game.
Nah.
Yeah. Right. Anyway, that is enough for Gruul tokens for me. I have to go take a long shower to wash the stench of green off of me. It's almost the end of the show, gentlemen. So I'm just going to say thanks for tuning in, everybody. If you want to support the podcast for all the good things we put in your ears, head over to Patreon or give us a 5-star review on iTunes. I've been checking. We've not been getting many of those lately, we've not been getting any reviews on iTunes. So I'd like to see that. I'm going to be checking the iTunes Europe. And Nate and Phil are going to be checking the iTunes America. We love our listeners, and we're incredibly grateful to all our Patreons like Nick Jaragulski.
If you want to come playtest with Sean or myself or Nick, come join the deck testing group. And if you donate $10 or more per episode, come join the patron chat we host over on Facebook.
Our theme song was created for the podcast by Nate Burgess.
Yeah.
Our logo was created for the podcast by MrPicto.co.uk with assistance from Kelly DeLuca and the person beeping their horn outside my house. Special thanks to our tech whizzes Jesse Thompson and Graham Frank, and of course to Justin for his server space. You can reach us by going to our website at CommanderAndMTG.com, and our email is cast@CommanderAndMTG.com, and you can find us on all the usual social media stuff by searching for, you guessed it, Commander and MTG podcast, that's right. Individually on Twitter, I am at Copain26.
I'm at Mr. Plorg.
And Nick?
I'm at Radis Nick.
And if you want to get hold of Phil, he is at Ketjack, K-E-T-J-A-K, Ketjack. And Nick, you know what to do.
And that's our show.
Yay! Right.
Mandarin.
Anything exciting from Kaladesh, gentlemen?
Those new artifacts that, well, not the new artifacts, but the new reprints of the old artifacts.
The masterpieces. Masterpieces.
Yeah, some gorgeous artwork.
They are 40 artifacts from Magic's history, all powerful cards in their own rights, reprinted and crammed into roughly one in every 144 booster packs. What do we think about this policy? It's expeditions all over again, isn't it?
Some of those are exciting. I mean, I like the picture of on Solemn Simulacrum. I like the art on that.
Sad robot. He's good.
I'm excited to get one of the chromatic lanterns. They look pretty sweet.
So there's one card in every 144 boosters, and there's 40 different cards. Any maths whiz between the two of you that can work out the odds of pulling one of those?
To the internet.
I like the idea of the inventions. Masterpieces. And I just think their frequency's not enough, so it starts to feel a touch on the gimmicky side for me. Do you know what I mean?
Well, we'll see. We'll see how much gets opened.
But saying that, if some kid who's just getting into Magic or she's just getting into Magic and they rip open a Masterpiece Mana Crypt and sell it for enough to buy themselves a couple of new decks, or if they're doing Commander's Brew decks, like six new decks, then it's awesome, isn't it? So,
oh yeah.
Yeah, it's a very double-edged sword, I guess. I just wish there was more of them.
I think the rarity will make it more fun to see them in the wild, you know.
And there will be that cool moment where someone goes, right, Lightning Greaves, and they drop a Masterpiece Lightning Greaves, and everyone goes, ooh. Yeah.
It really enhances the pack lottery of opening your boosters.
Yeah, it does.
Yes, and I love ripping boosters. It's an addiction. I had to buy two boxes of Conspiracy 2 so I could rip one and leave the other. It's like, you know, in The Simpsons when they make two birthday cakes so Homer can wreck one and everyone else can enjoy the other one? I have to do that with Conspiracy and me, because otherwise I'll just wreck my drafting experience.
Did you get any good stuff?
I got a Show and Tell, which is a cool card, I think. I think it might be really dangerous, but also hilariously good fun. What else did I get? I got a Queen Marquesa. I'm trying to think. I got off of two other mythics. I didn't get a Saheeli, which I really wanted a Saheeli.
That's Kaladesh.
No, of course. Yeah, not Saheeli. Kaya. Kaya. I didn't get Kaya, and I really want about four Kaya. So I ended up just buying the singles for Kaya anyway. She's awesome, by the way. An absolute powerhouse.
Yeah, she's annoying.
Yeah, so I had a fun Conspiracy draft. By fun meaning terrible. I wasn't playing blue, so I passed the wizard that allows you to play a instant or sorcery that is not in your deck for free.
Oh yeah.
And I passed it to the left to the person who had just pulled the sorcery that allows you to take an extra turn or seal a permanent based on the voting around the table.
Expropriate,
yes. And he also had drafted the Flash clone. So, guess how many extra turns and permanents he stole during that game?
Many. So, obviously Nick has. Nate, have you been on the receiving end of an expropriate yet?
Not on the receiving end, no.
I have. It's really harsh. Especially when everyone's like, right, okay, take one of my things, next person's take one of my things, and then next person's... Oh, you can have an extra turn, to which everyone else looks at them across the table and says, no, don't do that, you fool. Nobody's going to take one of my things. It's like, so? Oh, yeah. Don't ever let them have extra turns, kids. Even if their board state's not that good, because basically you're saying, draw an extra card, play an extra land, have an extra attack step, untap all your mana for no gain. Or, well, they could have taken one of your precious permanents. Never mind.
I was using those.
Yeah. Always let people steal your stuff, says the Dimir player. Possession is 9/10 of the law, Nate.
Yep. Unless you're in red, then it's just until end of turn.
That's why God made sack outlets. Oh, that's religion.
And by God, you mean Richard Garfield and Mark Rosewater.
It's a pantheon.
Indeed.